The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following is a conversation between Ann Wahlstedt, the president and CEO of BoardSource, and Denver Frederick, host of The Business of Giving, on AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
When Darren Walker, the president of the Ford Foundation, was on the show, he said the following: everything that is right or wrong with an organization, whether a for-profit or nonprofit, can be traced to the doorstep of the Board of Trustees. It all begins with the board. The recognized leader in nonprofit board leadership, as well as supporting, training, and educating nonprofit leaders from across the country and throughout the world, is an organization called BoardSource. And it is a great pleasure to have with us this evening their president and CEO, Ann Wahlstedt. Good evening, Ann, and welcome to the Business of Giving.
So happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Provide us with some of the history of BoardSource and how it came upon this all-important mission.
Sure. So BoardSource is about 30 years of age. We were founded actually by the Association of Governing Boards of Colleges and Universities and the independent sector. And as the story goes, folks were going to AGB and asking for support around their boards of directors. And AGB said, well, but we only work with colleges and universities. Surely there must be someplace else for folks to go. And in fact, there were not. They turned around to independent sector, again, as the story goes, and said, you know, you must help folks. And IS said, no, that's not what we do either. And so they got together and started what was then the National Center for Nonprofit Boards as a project of AGB's. And then a couple of years after that, decided that there really was a need for us to be an independent organization. And so the National Center for Nonprofit Boards became its own organization in 1990. Mm-hmm. And we've been focused on this mission of how do we strengthen nonprofit boards and position them to really provide the leadership that social sector organizations need to do their best work ever since then.
And what are some of the common mistakes that boards, and I'm even talking about good boards, frequently make?
Yeah, there are a lot of things that boards can do wrong, but I try really hard not to pick on them too much because there's also a lot that boards do really well. But I think when we're looking at the things that tend to create dysfunction or lack of achievement when it comes to boards, it really comes down to two things or two categories. One is around expectations. You know, so how do you really make sure that when you're bringing on new board members and you're orienting them to what it means to be a strong board leader, that you're actually getting those expectations well aligned and that everybody knows exactly what's needed of them. I think a huge mistake that a lot of organizations make is that they really undersell the commitment of board service. And then, of course, they're disappointed when they turn around and, you know, somebody says, well, I'm giving you exactly what you asked for. You just didn't ask for very much.
No, what they really wanted was a yes. And they undersell it to get that yes.
That's right. That's exactly right. And the second category I would say is, you know, once folks are on board, really not taking the time to effectively engage people. And I don't mean engagement for engagement's sake, you know, making folks feel good about their board service. I really mean thinking about the highest and best use of the board. Mm-hmm. And how do we really take advantage of and leverage all of the work that we've hopefully done to get the right people around the table, to get the right people leading the organization at the board level and making sure that we're really tapping into that insight and expertise rather than just going through the motions and creating a scenario where you've got all of this talent that you're just not tapping into. And unfortunately, that happens way, way too much.
Oh, I know that well. Let's talk about some of the current issues with boards in the nonprofit sector. There's a real dissatisfaction regarding board diversity. Mm-hmm. Now, many organizations acknowledge this and have expressed a desire and an intent to address it. But I know you, BoardSource, have recently issued quite a comprehensive report looking at this very issue. Is any progress being made?
Well, the sad truth is, very, very little. BoardSource started first looking at the demographics of board composition with a study that we did in 1994, so, you know, more than 20 years ago. And we've made really tiny, tiny, tiny progress since then. We've moved the needle only very slightly when it comes to the racial and ethnic diversity of boards. And the current findings as of the 2017 study are that boards are 84% white in terms of the racial and ethnic makeup. And even more striking, 27% of all boards are actually 100% white.
Wow.
So, you know, there's a real challenge in terms of getting boards to a place where not only they are more representative of the communities that they are serving, but that they really have the perspective that they need in the boardroom to be able to make good decisions and strategy for an organization that don't have huge gaps in terms of perspective, insight, network. And we think those potential strategic blind spots are a real issue.
Yeah, I think what was really striking about this most recent report is that those numbers were actually worse in terms of diversity than they were in 2015.
That's
so it's
right.
not as if a progress is being made slowly.
Right.
It's almost as if it's in reverse.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're really not seeing the movement that we would hope to be seeing in terms of becoming more diverse. And of course, we wanted to understand, well, why might that be? And so we took a look at some of the practices of boards to see if there's anything that we could learn about, you know, why haven't we made more progress? And it's actually it's disappointing, but it's a very straightforward answer, and that is organizations, boards are simply not prioritizing demographics in board recruitment. And even more striking is there's real dissonance in terms of what boards and executives are saying is important to them in terms of diversity and what they're actually doing. Close to 1 in 5 of all of the executives that responded to the Leading with Intent survey indicated both that they were unhappy with the level of racial and ethnic diversity that they had on their board and that they were not prioritizing demographics in board recruitment. So when you think about the fact that 1 in 5 of all organizations that responded said, we're not happy, we're not doing anything about it,
yeah.
That's a huge challenge.
That
but
really
you really
is.
Don't have to look any further to understand why we haven't made more progress.
Well, absolutely right. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about measuring the impact of nonprofit organizations' program work, and everybody's looking to evaluate their effectiveness and make it better. How prevalent is that practice among boards themselves? Assessing their own performance as it relates to their key responsibilities.
It's not happening as much as we would like it to. Boards are not doing regular and rigorous board self-assessment. And I would add, boards are also not very good about regularly and formally assessing the performance of executives. Mm. So, you know, certainly the majority are, but a huge percentage are not. And that's a real challenge in terms of being a performance-oriented organization. The thing that I'll add there that is really fascinating is when it comes to board self-assessment, there seems to be, or the data suggests, that there's a real connection between those boards that are assessing their own performance and those boards that rate their performance higher. So, you know, you can't say that there's causation there, but there certainly is a relationship between those organizations and boards that are being thoughtful about their performance and those that are doing better. And we can actually see that there is a stronger relationship for those that have done it more recently. So it does matter. It's not just a waste of effort.
Absolutely.
It's not a
no.
waste of time.
That's a very interesting observation. And I also bet within these organizations, too, that the performance review process for the staff is not going to be that good or rigorous when the CEO themselves are not being reviewed by the board. It kind of is going to trickle down in more cases than not.
It certainly could. We don't ask questions about the evaluation practices for the rest of the staff. But I do think just as it's challenging to not have both the board and the executive being assessed, it's challenging to have a staff be assessed and not have the executive.
Right. There's an awful lot of clamor for greater collaboration. You can't pick up an article and not see somewhere in the piece we need more collaboration in the sector between and among organizations. Let's eliminate some of the duplication. Let's get better outcomes. But often left out of all these things that I look at is the role of the board and how their mindsets needs to change in order for these collaborations to really be meaningful. How does a board need to alter their perspective and orientation?
That's a great question, and it's something that I think a lot about and I think is really important for more of us to think about. And you know, I guess I would start with how are we defining success and how are boards defining success? And if we have a really narrow definition and are looking only at, you know, what has this organization in it, you know, the most narrow sense, accomplished, that is not necessarily an orientation that encourages a leader or an organization to invest in collaboration. You know, collaboration requires an openness, a level of comfort with lack of certainty, a willingness to experiment, a willingness to take risk, a willingness to define your success not only by what you've accomplished, but what you have enabled to make happen. And that is not necessarily the way that, you know, even we Board Source have trained boards to think. We need to, in my opinion, really open up the way that we think about what our organizations are designed to do and what and how that requires us to operate differently.
Yeah, that's really, really hard, but it is so critical and important. I mean, one thing that I've seen is encouraging is that younger people tend to look at these things from an issue perspective, where the older you are, you sometimes tend to look at them from an organizational perspective. I think it's just their whole idea of we had our Rolodex and they have their whole, everything's out on Facebook. There's a sense that it's more open. And I think that that is hopefully a positive trend for the future. But I've really seen that in a lot of different places.
Well, I certainly agree with the sentiment that thinking about issue or, you know, the word I would use is purpose.
Yeah.
And really, what are we trying to accomplish? Thinking about that first instead of the concept of, you know, who are we as an organizational entity and what are we trying to or what have we been doing type of orientation is really important. And this is not a, you know, original Ann Wollaston thought. Plenty of other folks have said this. There's great work talking about the, you know, the networked leader and the way that leaders can operate differently and really position their organization to be better at collaboration by thinking that way. And I do think that boards need to recalibrate around what that takes in terms of the relationship between the board and the executive in terms of trust and flexibility. I also think it goes back to the way that we think about strategic planning. And, you know, if we're focused on predicting what we should accomplish, that's really going to limit us in terms of what we are able to do. It shouldn't be about predicting what we can do. It should be about remaining open to what's possible.
Absolutely. One of our favorite themes on the Business of Giving is corporate culture of nonprofit organizations. As a matter of fact, I had the great pleasure to visit your place, and you have a wonderful one down there. But we've never really examined the leadership culture and dynamics of the board of directors and how it conducts its work. But you have. What are some of those insights?
Yeah, you know, we talk about culture as being the secret sauce of boards and really what makes a difference in terms of how boards operate and how they perform. Leading with Intent asks a lot of questions related to board culture and what really defines a positive culture. And we did some interesting things with this particular study to take a peek at what might matter most, particularly as it relates to overall organizational performance. And the thing that stood out from a culture perspective was the extent to which the board operates as a collaborative team working towards shared goals, which sounds a little squishy, but it turns out really, really matters, which is probably no surprise to anyone. But to see it in stark relief in terms of the data, I think is important. And it also, to me, is a real signal that boards that miss the opportunity to invest in that culture are really putting the effectiveness of the board at risk. We asked some questions related to how much is the board investing in social time between board members and being really intentional about building the team. You know, some boards are meeting only 3 or 4 times a year. If you need that group of people to operate as a team, you need to be intentional about building that bond.
Mm-hmm.
And those were some of the questions that got the lowest responses in the affirmative in terms of those investments in social time. So when you see how important it is and you see that it's not necessarily happening as much as we would like to, I think that's a real opportunity for boards to think about some high leverage investments in change.
That makes a lot of sense. You recently held your Board Source Leadership Forum, which was attended by 1,000 social sector leaders. Another sellout. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And at this forum, you touched upon 4 things that you believe organizations need to do to unlock their full potential. And if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you to say a word about each one, if you would. The first was purpose. And this is not the same as a mission statement, is it?
That's right. We talk about purpose as that deeper level of understanding about what your organization is really seeking to accomplish in the world. And the reason we use that word instead of mission statement is, you know, folks get really wrapped up and here's what our mission statement says. And mission statements often are actually more of a description of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily capturing the reason for existence. And that's what I mean when we talk about purpose. And, you know, for some organizations, that really goes back to the reason that they were founded. For others, the purpose has shifted over time, and that's okay. But it's really understanding why are we here? Why do we do the work that we do? And one of the things that I think is so powerful about focusing on purpose is there is an opportunity to think about purpose-aligned organizations in a different way. When you're thinking about mission statement or organizational structure, you're thinking about brand and unit-level success.
That's right.
When you're thinking about purpose, you're thinking about what are we seeking to accomplish and who can help us? And I think that is a subtle but really powerful shift for organizations to be thinking about and talking about at the board level.
Yeah, it's the why of the organization.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
The second thing is for an organization to define its values and live into them. And the last part of that statement is really key, isn't it?
Absolutely. What's the point of having values if they don't actually mean something in terms of the way that your organization operates? I told the story at the conference about a story that a lot of business school professors tell, and they talk about corporate values and they share these four words: communication, respect, integrity, and excellence. And then they turn around and ask their students, you know, what's wrong with these? And of course, everyone's confused because there's nothing wrong with them and, you know, what could possibly be wrong with them. But then the professors will go on and say, well, you know, actually, what's wrong with these is that they were Enron's corporate values in the midst of a huge, you know, corporate ethics scandal. And the point being that the values, organizational values, need to really come from what an organization has committed itself to do and to be, and they need to live them with each and every decision that they make.
Mm-hmm. I thought your third recommendation was most interesting, which is cultivate resilience through flexibility. Speak to that.
Well, you know, I'm a firm believer that there is just no strength in rigidity or predetermined plans that do not acknowledge that we are in a constant state of change and flux. And I think that we can really get into a trap. Any organization can get into the trap of thinking, you know, well, here's what we want to accomplish 3 years from now. Here's how we're going to do it. And these are all of the steps and sort of tactics that we're going to put into place. And it's, you know, it's almost laughable.
Hmm.
It really doesn't reflect the reality of how our organizations and our world exists. And I think it sets boards and staffs up for failure in some ways in terms of thinking, you know, well, is it about what we said we were going to do? Or is it about what is the right thing to do in this moment? And so we really encourage boards to think, you know, how do you build some sense of shared understanding about the direction that you're headed and really get clear about what's most important for you to do, but then leave a whole lot of flexibility about how you get it done.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people would have anticipated 3 years ago that Donald Trump would be president, as
right.
an example. So you have to be able to pivot and adjust some of your plans according to that. Your final thought was build power and influence, and perhaps that message has never been more important than now.
Well, I certainly think that's right. You know, BoardSource as an organization, we've been talking about the importance of power in the public policy context for a number of years. We launched a campaign several years ago called the Stand for Your Mission campaign, which is really focused on helping board members understand the role that nonprofits can and should play in public policy and helping board members themselves understand how they as individuals can really play a powerful role as advocates for their mission. Well, when you're talking about all of the things that nonprofits are facing in terms of radical shifts or potential shifts in public support, policy changes that are impacting the communities that they serve and the ways in which they do their work, you know, to your point, really never has there been a more important time to talk about that.
And now you have the Stand for Your Mission Awards.
That's right. We announced at the conference that we are inviting organizations to apply for the Stand for Your Mission Award, which will honor an organization that really is standing for its mission and that has thoughtfully engaged the board in that work of advocacy.
Very cool. Let's move on to another issue. You know, a frequently debated topic in the sector is fundraising effectiveness. Now, many will argue that how much of each dollar goes to program is really a poor proxy for impact, although I think most donors and average donors look at that still more than any other. On the other side of the spectrum, people will say, hey, don't worry about how much money you spend. Your job is to accumulate as much as you can to serve the mission. BoardSource, along with some of your colleagues in the sector, have developed a new framework for measuring fundraising effectiveness. What does that look like?
Yeah, so, you know, the dynamic that you're articulating in terms of, you know, some folks saying cost of fundraising shouldn't matter at all. Other folks looking at it as, you know, not just a good measure of fundraising effectiveness, but a good measure of organizational effectiveness.
Which the is, measure.
Which is, from my perspective, so wildly off base. But we saw that there was a real need to make sense of that, or to attempt to make sense of that, both for boards and for the public. And so you mentioned colleague organizations. This is a joint initiative with GuideStar, BBB Wise Giving Alliance, and the Association of Fundraising Professionals. And what we came up with was a very, very simple way of articulating the risks associated with overemphasizing cost of fundraising. So we introduced something that we call the dependency quotient, which is a measure of the extent to which an organization is dependent on its top five donors. And the point that we're trying to make is that sometimes, in an effort to spend as little as possible on fundraising, we are actually under-resourcing the very tactics and approaches to fundraising that give us resilience, flexibility, sustainability for our organizations. And so we want boards to understand that. Mm-hmm. So we created this initiative with this very simple framework. And then what's really most powerful about it, at least in my opinion, is a discussion guide that we created for boards to actually talk about it.
Oh, very good, and much needed. Sticking with fundraising for a second, what is BoardSource's business model, and what are your streams of revenue that support the work of the organization?
Well, it's certainly shifted and changed over our 30 years of existence. But the way that we operate now is really, we're a 501c3 organization ourselves, but we have a really sort of hybrid model in terms of the way that we support our work. So we have programs, services that we offer to individual organizations and leaders, some of the things that probably folks are most familiar with when they think of BoardSource, board self-assessment, consulting services, publications. Those are fee-based. We are fortunate that thanks to the efforts of the past several years, those programs actually support themselves. And so we rely on philanthropic support to do things like leading with intent, investing in research, and then all of this growing leadership agenda that's really focused on where are there these opportunities for us sector-wide that, you know, boards aren't necessarily thinking about, but they should be.
Yeah.
So it's a combination that for us has been quite powerful in terms of unlocking our full leadership potential and our ability to really create and push for culture change at the board level.
Let me get your take on this, and I don't know if BoardSource has ever done any study on this, so it may be your own personal opinion, but it has to do with the ability of the sector to attract and retain talent. You know, there was an article I read in Fast Company the other day that suggested that social good and purpose-driven organizations are really beginning to poach some of the very best talent from nonprofits organizations over to them. Do you see this as a real concern?
You know, it's interesting. I don't have a lot of we don't have any of our own research on it, but certainly I pay attention. Just, you know, thinking as a nonprofit CEO and a CEO who is thinking about the sector as a whole. You know, it used to be that when folks were going into their careers, if they wanted to make a difference, if they felt like, you know, I'm about social good, the place that they naturally felt that they should land was in the nonprofit sector, or perhaps in the public sector, in government or public service. That's really shifted, and there's plenty of other evidence around that. And folks coming into the workforce are sector agnostic, or many are sector agnostic in terms of where they feel they can have the biggest impact. I do think that as leaders of nonprofit organizations, that means we need to think differently about the way that we operate and the way that we compete for talent. And we need to think about talent more than we do, and really being thoughtful. And there is a board role here, you know, making sure that we have talent strategies. And I'm not sure that that's something that nonprofits have typically, at least historically, spent as much time thinking about. It was sort of, well, if people want to do good, they'll come. And if they don't, that's okay, because we got plenty who will. Yeah. And I just don't think that's the way that things are going to be.
No. They got a lot of competition. There's a war on talent. And I think, again, if you look at millennials, they just want to do good in this world. And the rest of it is just a decision an organization makes with the IRS as to how they're going to form their organization.
That's right. Right.
Let me close with this, Anne. Every industry is going through incredible disruption, and they're doing so at an unprecedented rate, and philanthropy, certainly in the nonprofit sector, will be no exception. What do you hope for and aspire to see in the boards of this sector in terms of being able to navigate the turbulent waters that lay ahead?
Oh, what a fun, great question. You know, I go back to what you asked me initially in terms of the big challenges or mistakes that boards make. I really hope that boards can become what they were always designed to be, or at least what I think they were always designed to be, which is a group of thoughtful, talented leaders from all walks of life with lots of different exposure, perspective, experience, coming together around a common goal, a common purpose, and really, truly leveraging all that they can do for an organization. And there's obviously a ton wrapped into that. But I think, you know, helping boards understand that they are not there just to prevent bad things from happening. They are there to make sure that good things do. And that means really moving beyond kind of the role of the board as risk prevention. That's still important. Mm-hmm. But that is, in my opinion, a relatively small, it's an important but small portion of what boards really need to be doing. And thinking about how do we lead more in community? How do we expand our way of thinking about our leadership beyond what happens around the boardroom table? And really become the connection to community, the insight in terms of dynamics, trends, changes, the seeing around corners, the thinking differently outside of the social sector industry. I just think that there's such chemistry and power in what that could be. And you see it sometimes. We don't see it enough. But when you see it, it is so incredibly powerful. And I hope that every organization can have that.
That's great. Well, Ann Wallestead, the president and CEO of BoardSource, I want to thank you for coming by this evening. Tell us about your website and what information visitors might find there.
Wonderful. Yes, our website is www.boardsource.org. There's lots of information there in terms of resources for boards, as well as all of the research that we've mentioned, which is also available at leadingwithintent.org. Would encourage folks to visit that to learn more about our work on the Stand for Your Mission campaign, to learn more about the power of possibility, and lots of things that we could have going on that are relevant to organizations and leaders today.
Great. Thanks so much, Ann. It was a real pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
The Business of Giving can be heard every Sunday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern on AM 970 The Answer in New York and on iHeartRadio. You can follow us at Biz of Give on Twitter and at Facebook.com/Business of Giving.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.